Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the February 10th Behind Our Eyes book launch. I'm your host, Annie Chipetta. And tonight we have our guest author, Kevin Hupshman. Before we get to Kevin, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him first. Kevin Hupshman lives in the Carolinas with his wife, Trish Hupshman, the author of the Tracy Gale series and other books, and their dog, Henry. Kevin says he's battling a variety of issues, including chronic kidney disease, and is taking things day by day. We're thinking about you, Kevin. Kevin is also the author of a collection of songs and poems called Outside the Circle, and that's available on Amazon. This is Kevin's first novel. With a follow-up planned featuring Ken Halsey's continuing story in the works. One More Reason to Cry, Kevin's book, is the first part of a two-part novel of the life of Ken Halsey. It's a roller coaster ride of Ken's many mishaps and few triumphs. Part one chronicles Ken's first 3 decades of life from the 1960s to the mid-1980s. So let's follow Ken and pick up that book and read it. So Ken Halsey's story begins in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, to his rocky school years to the early beginning of his working life. And don't forget, watch out for that second novel after you read the first one. And I think that might be called Ken Halsey's Next Years, or possibly even may have a new title. I don't know. We'll check in with Kevin. The DLD website to Kevin's book is www.dldbooks.com/Kevin Hupshman, and it's KevinHupshman. All right. Welcome, Kevin. How are you?
Good evening. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So I already said some stuff about you, but probably not enough. So we're going to continue the questions. So, what made you write this book?
Well, I guess it would be the male equivalent of a diary or a journal that I kind of kept mostly in my head more than on paper throughout. All of the years. And then, different revelations come to you later in life when you realize things that you maybe hadn't percepted before. And the trick is to get everything down on paper. But as I've said, in the mists of time, and for the purposes of fictionalizing things, things get kind of twisted around a little bit.
Yeah, I understand that. One of my novels is based a lot on what went on in my personal life. And, sometimes I believe what I wrote that didn't really happen. I don't know. We tend to believe our stories, right?
Well, it's a blurred line in a lot of instances.
So, who helped you write this book in terms of getting it, formatted and stuff like that? Was it DLD Books?
I didn't need any proofreading or editing or anything like that because I was a sort of an English teacher. I had an internship and I did some substitute teaching for middle school English, so I don't have much trouble in that department. As far as the formatting, yeah, it was David at DLD Books. I still owe money too.
Wait, you shouldn't be admitting that. I don't know. Who helped you with the cover? Did you make the cover? Did David?
I had originally called the book something else. It was called Grown Up, GROW-EN, Up, and I had come up with a cover that was sort of a timeline from a silhouette of a baby to a person in their 60s. I just ultimately did not like the cover or the title, so I took the same book and I retitled it One More Reason to Cry. And since it's sort of a comedy and a tragedy, I came up with the cover of the classic masks, theater masks for comedy and tragedy. So, yeah, that was all my idea.
Okay, and then then David helped you make it into a cover.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can't do is the formatting and,
Yeah, no, I.
technical stuff.
Well, it sounds like it was meant to be then, you know?
Yeah, it was great to see it finally because I've had all these pages, in these loose leaf binders for so long as I can remember. They've managed to survive moving from three different, houses. So, it was a relief to be able to get it in a copy that I can have on my bookshelf.
Yeah. I know I've lost some of my own diaries and I can kick myself for losing them. I probably should have kept them or kept closer touch of them, but oh well. Things happen, right?
I think more people should, because I talk to some people and a lot of people have interesting stories about their lives. And even David's wife at DLD, she's had a pretty interesting life. And people I've met at the senior center, and one of the couples there actually wrote a book about the time they spent their 50th wedding anniversary in Alaska. And it was great. It was funny. It was moving. So I think a lot of people have stories to tell, but they're afraid because they might not know how to write. Well, they might not know how to spell, but I just took a shot at it, and I'm not a professional writer.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing to undertake, especially like that about that couple with their 50th wedding anniversary memories. That's beautiful. I just read a thing from this book promoter. His name is Chad Allen, and he said that like millions of people indicate that they want to re write a book, and but only 3% of those millions actually write one. Only 3%.
Get it actually read. That's the trick.
But to write it, like people say they want to write a book, but yet, people don't pursue it as much as they, think they might want to do. I mean, it's so much easier nowadays too, being an independently published writer is, it's something that isn't as intimidating as it used to be.
It's hard to get any feedback either. I mean, I know that some people have bought my book and some people have read it, but I don't get any feedback on it. I don't care if you hate it, but I'm not getting any reactions, which leads me to believe, did these people even buy the book? Did they read it? Because I could use the feedback.
Well, that's a good call to action here on this list. If anybody has read Kevin's book on Amazon or Kindle, please put your, write a little review and put it in there. It's really going to help him. I know, Kevin, I struggle with those review things too. I try to do my best as a person who reads to review people's books from Amazon and Kindle, and I do most of the time. I haven't done yours yet. I don't know why, but I will do it. I will get to it for sure.
I used to be sort of like a semi-professional reviewer, but it was more for music and like CDs and
Yeah.
live shows. I had a friend in on Long Island that owned Good Times magazine, which was a free publication they had everywhere, supermarkets and record
Yeah, I
stores.
remember that.
So I went in there because the guy owed the I worked for the civil service at the time, and I had to go there frequently because the guy owed us a lot of money. And he I you know I said, well, can you let me do a little reviewing? And I said, yeah, you take one of these CDs and let's see what you can do. And I have quite a few back issues here that
That's cool.
have the reviews printed in them.
Do you read them again? Like, do you read what you wrote? Like, do you ever go
Yeah.
back? And I call it ego scanning because I
Yeah.
do that too. I ego scan my own stuff.
I'll frame some. One of them I have the cover story on, so I frame that one.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. So the genre of your book is, I mean, what I would consider literary fiction. and you, how would you, I mean, how would you describe your readership, their age, and their preferences in genre? I mean, do you want young kids to read this, teens, older kids? How would you?
Kind of depends on your level of, I guess, shock and how you've been brought up. If you've been brought up, puritanically, and you're not going to like the book. If you've probably brought up in the 60s and on, you probably understand a lot of the points to it. But even, I would say, teens from today, they're always eager to find out what happened in the past and things that don't exist anymore. So that's kind of a help for them too.
Okay, great. Do you want to read any of your poetry or lyrics, or?
Let's see. The poems are fairly short, so I guess that's.
Yeah, read a couple. So the book is Outside the Circle for our listeners, and it's on Amazon and Kindle.
A lot of these are originally were songs, so they don't translate as well to the spoken without the music, but I'll try to find one.
Okay.
Now, here's a short one. It's called Fall, FALL. Dawn breaks, and one of the few times I see it. Couldn't sleep last night. Emotional thoughts can drive away sleep spirits. Like a limo lost in a Manhattan tunnel. God, she knows I'm out here trying to get in. I only want to know just what the hell I did. It seems to me I'm wrong, whatever I may say or do. I guess I just don't understand love. Do you? Open the window onto cold November. Another Thanksgiving, come and gone.
Wow. I like the image of the limo slipping into the tunnel. That's pretty
Probably
cool.
during one of our many fights.
Ah. As long as you don't go to bed angry, right? Isn't that what people
Yeah,
say?
well, things have improved a lot over the years. I mean, back in the beginning, we had a lot of problems, and I think moving away was the best thing we did.
Yeah. Well, marriage is, it's not something that you just, pop into the microwave and it comes out cooked. You got a lot, there's a lot of things you have to work on together, and you both got to cooperate. So I think every sustainable couple, you've been, whether it's 20 years or 30 years or even 10 years, you go back, you think about what it was like when you first became a couple, and it's like, oh my goodness. We got past those things.
Yeah,
So,
it
yeah.
was
All right, well, back to the book. So, how long did it take to actually write the book?
well, it was already compiled into these loose leaves, so all I had to do was really polish it up. Henry!
Oh.
So, just getting off my rear and just saying now I'm going to really do it. So it wasn't, I mean, I could say it's a labor of over 40 years or so, but to actually get it published was a pretty fast process.
Do you have to type it from handwritten binder paper, that kind of thing?
No, I was always good with that stuff. So when I was, even when I was very young, I had a typewriter. So I just type out, I kept type my school assignments and
Oh, all right.
yeah, but I do have good handwriting, so I got that from my father.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah.
I don't, I think kids barely get any cursive handwriting instruction anymore. I find that bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know what people are going to do because there's still a lot of things that are in cursive.
Yeah. Still have to know how to write your name.
Yeah, at least it's been that.
So, good thinking about the book, There was a lot of tough parts of this book, some gritty stuff going on. Did you struggle with any parts of this book in terms of toning it down, or thinking about, well, maybe I shouldn't include that or anything like that?
Well, that's just not the kind of person I am, which I guess explains the reason that I am a bit off-putting to a lot of people and don't have any friends or my family either. Won't turn their backs on me, but I have to just tell it like it is, and I don't think it should be sugar-coated at all. I want people to know that, this is a version of reality, and one of the goals is to have somebody look at that and say to themselves, well, after all he's gone through, well, he should really be dead, and he's still going, so whatever problems I have can probably be worked through as well.
Great perspective to have. I, personally, I think your book was really intense and there was sad parts to it and full of experiences, that I identified with because we grew up around the same time. And, just there were so many decisions affecting the main character, that were really difficult. Were all of these actually your experiences, or did you add or delete anything, or, change stuff around a
Well,
lot?
it's based on a lot of what I can recollect. My memory's not great. But, I think I was the character and myself are products of their environment. Brooklyn was a good place for Ken, and it was a good place for me. And to be ripped out of there because my parents were afraid that things were going to start getting worse in the city and move us to Long Island, where right from day one I felt like I didn't fit in there. And so it's also the schools that I went to on Long Island. I mean, they were most of the kids in school were into drugs and drinking, and that's the kind of school it was, and that's the kind of people I encountered. So as far as making friends, I didn't have a lot of options there. And you kind of get sucked into everything like that, and you just try to keep above it all. Like, no matter what, you'll see in the book that no matter what happens to Kenny, he always maintains some semblance of self-control. He never loses himself. He's never in any like really critical danger of doing something so reckless that it would cost him his life. It's that kind of thing.
Self-preservation, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that's learned or something that you're born with or a little bit of both?
Well, I don't think you can learn it or be born with it. I think it's just a matter of what needs to be done. I always do what I have to do. And one of my poems, I reflecting on them, my line is, I can handle it. I've always handled it. And do I like being having all this responsibility and not having many people I can talk with or discuss anything, or people that are even sympathetic to my problems? No, but I mean, this is the you have the cards that you're dealt, and you can either play them or you can give up.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the other characters in the book. How well did you remember or misremember them, in your opinion?
Well, I had a kind of stylized version of my mother in the book, and it wasn't until after I finished it, until after on my 60th birthday, when she never called me, and I started to realize that she had dementia, and then it's been 3 years now since I've heard anything from her. I can't call her because she has around the clock care, and the aides will just hang the phone up on me, and so I don't know what's going on with that. But in the book, we have a pretty close relationship. My second book, not going to be as kind to her as the first one was. My father, he was a very good guy, but he worked all the time, 6 days a week, and he kind of just left the job of parenting both mother and father to my mother, and she was kind of emotionally abusive, a little bit physically, but mostly emotional. So that really took a toll on me.
What does your family think about the book?
Well, my family to speak of as it is consists of my younger brother, who hasn't spoken to me for over 20 years. So I very much doubt that he even is aware that there is a book out. And my mother has not picked up a book, a magazine. She gave everything up. She basically just watches TV all day long, every single day. So I don't have to really worry about that. My mother-in-law did read the book. She's going to be 90 this November, and she thought it was a bit shocking, but it was well written, and it kept her, attention. And she's a very avid reader.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I know when we were talking before, you mentioned your seniors group. Have any of them read the book?
There's one guy I gave a copy of the book to. He's 94, and he doesn't say much about it, but he didn't criticize it either. I mean, he said he read it, and for me, for a guy like him, that's all I could really expect. The other people seem, and this is kind of an ongoing thing with the seniors group, is they're very, I wouldn't say puritanical, but they're very devoted to religion, and it's a fine line to have a county-run organization like a seniors group, where people, shouldn't matter if you're Christian, Jewish, and there's many different types of Christians, Christians, and even people that don't believe in God. And everybody should be welcome and accepted there. But there are people there that kind of, they're like zealots, and they kind of proselytize all the time. And I find that very disconcerting. And I can't enjoy myself at a place like that. So I'm trying to get the county to realize that there needs to be some kind of a separation, because living here in the Carolinas, there are certainly, there's like a place of worship on every corner, practically. So you don't
You know
really.
what they call the South, the Bible Belt. I'm at the we're right at the beginning of like the Midwest, and like living in Pennsylvania, it's kind of like that here, but I can see where, if you don't have your choices, and you have, having closed-mindedness can affect any group of people. So,
Yeah, that's a violation of law too. In fact, it doesn't matter what state you're in.
Yeah, I try to keep my mind open and, let everybody pick or choose as they see fit, but it's hard in groups like that. I guess they get to a certain level of comfort, or
Yeah.
like-mindedness, and they just, it just kind of builds on itself.
Right. But everything you do to stand up for yourself comes at a price, because you're not going to make many fans by being the bad guy. And it seems like I'm always the one who nobody else will say anything, and I'm the one that has to do it, because I generally don't like to sit back and take things. It leads to a lot of problems, and it leads to a lot of enmity.
Right. Wow. So we're just about at 7:30, and we can start taking some questions.
Okay.
All right. Let me get over to the right window. We're such an intimate group here. I think if you just unmute yourself and say your name and ask your question, that'll be fine. I don't think we have to do the hand raising thing. So if anybody has a question for Kevin, just unmute and speak up. Anybody?
Hi, this is Lisa. I was wondering how long the book is.
It is, let me just take a quick look. So 328 pages.
Could you repeat that, Kevin?
328. You know, if
Thank
you look
you.
at my loose leaf, all the pages I have in there, it's like 700 or 800. So I said, even if I edit this and condense it down, it has to be two books.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So your other book will be about the same amount in pages.
Yeah, hopefully, if I can get it, tail it down that far. I have really not started editing that book yet. It's tentatively titled already. It's going to probably be called The Absence of Presence, and that kind of fits my situation very well. And the cover is going to be generated by artificial intelligence. I already have some ideas for that.
Sounds like that art the AI got released just in time for a lot of people to use it for their book covers, and I have a lot of fun with it. I mean,
Yeah.
I know that there are bad apples and they take advantage, but I mean, if you use it responsibly, there's no reason to not use it if you use it responsibly, right?
I
Think
think
of
it's
it like driving a car. You got to be responsible and know what and how to use it and know the rules, and then you're okay.
I think it'll help, like you said, a lot of people that always wanted to write their stories. It'll help them really get that out because it'll be such a major tool for, writing and music too, and practically anything you can think of, science. And I'm praying that they come up with something that will help me live with kidney disease for a very long time. I just read where a 66-year-old man just got a pig kidney transplanted, and he said he feels great and he's off dialysis. So hopefully the longer I can stave it off, the better the technology will be.
Yeah, it's interesting. What we going back to the thing about AI. I mean, I do a lot of volunteer stuff, and I'm the president of Friends in Art and all that. And I wanted to write a fundraising letter, and I went to ChatGPT and put in my string of terms, and it came out with a beautiful letter. And I just, it was great. It hit all the points, and it organized it well. And I went in and edited it and added little. Things, personalizing it a little bit, but pretty much that AI took an hour's worth of work from me and gave me back an hour. So I value it for the time piece, and the ability to organize things, when you get stuck. I was stuck. I wasn't sure, what I wanted to say or how I want to say it. And
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Yeah,
So.
it'll cut down on a lot of research for those kind of books, like historical fiction, where you need to know, need to be a little accurate with things, and so you won't
Yeah.
have to, that's probably a drudgery part of writing that kind of book is the research. I always hated doing research for college papers and then this and that, and so this would have been great back then.
Yeah, where did you go to school? I don't think we covered that in the beginning.
Did my first semester, I wanted to go away to school and I wanted to major in accounting because my father was a CPA. So my guidance counselor suggested I go to Bloomsburg State College in Pennsylvania, which is now called Bloomsburg University.
All right.
It is so close to Scranton, Hazleton area. And it was another one of those situations where it was kind of a party school and I didn't get much done. And just living away was kind of traumatizing me because I was always taken care of, and there was always food on the table and this and that, and I didn't have to work. And so it really affected my grades there. So I started applying to more local schools on Long Island. I applied to Hofstra. I didn't get in there. And I got into Adelphi, and that's
Okay.
where I ended up going to and graduating from with a bachelor's in English and a minor in education.
Why'd you pick education?
Well, I always thought, what can I do that I'm good at? And I was always good at English. I always got A's on my writing papers. And in college, I took advanced writing courses when I was a freshman. I took a course that was only for seniors because there's an excerpt in the book that's based on that incident where I wrote a
Right, I remember
story.
that, yes.
And it so impressed the professor that he let me into a C-level class when I was a freshman or a sophomore.
Right, so you had to, yeah, there was a prerequisite, but you managed to impress the professor, so he waived that to get into
Yes.
that class in the
Well, I
book.
figured, English would be good. I think the mistake I made was not going for a more diverse, like a grade school type of situation where you're just dealing with one group of kids and you get used to that and it becomes a little more rote. Whereas, my internship and student teaching experiences, the kids were very unruly and they don't respect you when you're just there as a substitute or as an intern. And it kind of soured me on the whole thing. And also the fact that I had applied to every school district on Long Island and couldn't even get a single interview. So that kind of dashed my hopes of that.
So what did you do?
Well, my father started bringing home a civil service newspaper with state, county, and federal exams that you could take to get jobs.
Yes.
So I started taking exams, and I took one for a tax compliance representative at the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance. And I got the job, actually went for the interview. In at the World Trade Center, and I had my choice of working there, working in Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue, and I chose Brooklyn. I wouldn't have affected me as far as 9/11 because by that time the tax department was out of that building. But still, it's something to reflect on. And so I worked in Brooklyn for started in 1985.
Right.
I spent 2 years out of college just pounding the pavement, going to Manhattan every day, looking for a job, going on interviews, so I couldn't get anything. I really wanted to do something with proofreading, copy editing, publishing, something like that, but I couldn't break into that. It was very tough.
Yeah.
And so after that, I took the test and got the job, and I started going to Brooklyn every day, which was kind of a drag. You know, you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you got to get up on that freezing cold train platform.
Oh, so you work, you commuted.
Yeah,
How long was the commute?
it was about 45 minutes. Once you got to the station, the subways and buses were so overcrowded that it was faster to actually walk down to where the building was. So that took another 15 or 20 minutes, and then you'd leave the building in the wintertime and it was pitch dark out. The neighborhood was not great. And so it was a little scary. And I did that until 1988 when, I transferred to the tax department in Hempstead, Long Island. And that was much better because I was much
Closer to
closer
home,
to,
right?
yeah, and
Yeah.
also Trish was working in Hempstead also at that time for the state insurance fund, which was practically around the corner from where I was working. And at that time, she was a lot more independent. She could take buses and things like that, and she could walk a lot, you
How did you guys meet?
know. I put ads in the Newsday newspaper on Long Island in the personals,
Yeah.
and went on quite a few dates before. I think her mother pressured her to get out of the house and answer some of the ads. So that's what happened. And
Wow, personal ad, huh? Wow.
yeah. And I think I write something about some of those dates in the book that really went awry.
What, in the second book? Or
Could be in the first book. I'm not sure.
I don't
It
remember
probably
that, but I
is
could be misremembering.
because
I know you there were some dates, I think, but
the second book focuses more on the period after I left
right.
the area.
Well, you're gonna
So.
have to get that book written, Kevin, because now I'm
Well, it's written. I just have to catch up financially with the publishers because now I have to pay for her book. And she wants to also put out a book later on with all those dog stories, you know,
Yeah, Henry
compiled.
stories.
So it could be one of these situations where you don't like the first book, but the second book kind of makes you like the first book because the second book is more relatable to you personally.
Right.
That's the kind of thing that could happen because it's a lot
Yeah.
less gritty and it's still captivating, but you know, it shows the maturity.
Yeah. You also have a context, a backstory you might not have, if you didn't read the first book into the second book. It's kind of funny, like when I read authors who have a series, they have to lean into the backstory of the first book in the second book. And I get impatient with that sometimes. I'm like, I already read the first book. I don't want to read over, but they feel obligated to do that because they don't want readers to feel like they've gotten dropped in the middle of nowhere. I get that. But sometimes I find it almost too much, especially if I'm reading, a three series book, books that are three, like three books, and I'm going to read them right after the other. Why would I need all that backstory? Like I already read the backstory. So I don't know.
Well,
That's
I
just
kind
me.
of addressed that right at the beginning. So from page one, you can see that it's kind of the whole thing's kind of like a flashback. I'm not going to have a flashback on the flashback. So
Right.
it's
Yeah.
already been dealt with.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Anybody else have questions for Kevin?
This is Marlene. I do.
All right, Marlene, go
Do
for
you
it.
ha is there a correlation between music and writing for you?
Well, definitely with the book of poetry and songs. When I was younger, I bought they call it a four track. It looks like a cassette recorder, but you can record like two tracks, like say drums and guitar on one side. You can flip the tape over and you can record any kind of other instruments and vocals on the other side. So I started writing songs basically in college. You took a lot of these boring 4 hour classes. And the rules were very loose at that time. You could sit in the back of the classroom and smoke your pipe or your cigarettes and, and just drift off because things got boring. So I wrote a lot of songs that way and poems. And when I was working, I used to write some of my poems on the bathroom wall. I didn't really appreciate that too much.
No.
It does kind of one thing kind of leads into the other, and my book does mention a lot of scenarios about concerts and music and things, and and playing in bands, and my brother now being in bands with me and things like that. So, music is a huge part of my life, where most people, keep statistics about sports and players and things like that. I know a great deal about music from, especially from the 60s to the 80s, and I try to keep up on what's going on today. That doesn't particularly interest me that much, but yeah, it's all related.
Cool. Have you written actually any songs with music scores or guitar, piano?
I don't play instruments very well. Back when I was younger, around 1989, I had a friend that could play any instrument, so he did a lot of the tracks on my songs. So I do have them on MP3 files. People have heard them; they like them. Some people say, "Wow, I can't believe that's you," because I'm so shy, I could never just, like right now, just start singing, but it was, I tried to get some more people involved, but it's very tough because you really have to come into this with a couple of friends already, because to just try to get strangers together to do music is very tough,
Yeah.
so.
That's true. There's a level of trust and just a whole bunch of other types of dynamics that go on in that kind of like a musical band or a group or a chorus or whatever. Got to work together and get to know each other and
Yeah.
yeah.
But I have songs that I think are good enough that if somebody, famous could at least listen to them, they might be interested. But that is practically impossible to make something like that happen.
If you have, this is Lisa again. If you have MP3 files, could you put them on YouTube or somewhere?
I don't know. I'm not very technical. I did have some of the songs were on a website, but I'd have to go back and see what the name of the website was. If I can remember that, I'll post something on Facebook, or I'll tell Trish to tell people about it.
Yeah.
And the friend I had that helped me with the songs, he said to me, he had the opposite problem as me. I had a bunch of lyrics and words and that I couldn't put to music, and he had a bunch of music that he couldn't figure out. He says like every one of his lyrics sounded stupid, and he couldn't really do it. So he gave me a bunch of instrumental music, and I turned those into songs too. I put words to his music, so I have some of those recordings as well.
Oh, that's who you want to try to, find the person that has the music but needs the words. That's what I need. I need a person who wants to write the music to my words, because I kind of know, like I get an idea in my head, like I know what a song could be, but I have no idea how to write a song. I'm a
Well,
I write the words, not the song. So.
that's kind of what I do with Trisha's stories. I have the good ideas, but I'm like, I could never turn this into a book. So I give her the ideas, and she turns them into
All right. So let's see. So we're at 7:45. Does anybody have any other questions for Kevin?
Yes, Kevin, this is Abby. And just for those of you, in case there's anybody here who isn't familiar with Trisha's Tracy Gale series, she writes these books about this detective, Private Eye Tracy Gale, who is married to heartthrob rock singer Danny Tide, who has his own band, Tidal Wave. And so, Kevin, I'm just wondering if you've ever thought about writing a song or two that Danny Tide might write or sing, and somehow incorporate that somehow Trish could incorporate into one into a Tracy Gale mystery. I'm not sure how that would work, but I just it just the idea just kind of came into my head, and I'm just wondering if you ever thought about it.
I believe she did do that once. I think I had a song called Party, and she did use that in, I don't know if the book was called
Okay.
Mailwave. I think it was one of the more recent books, but I'm pretty sure she did just that.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay, I just don't remember seeing the lyrics, but maybe I just maybe misremembering, as Anne says. So that's great. That's
Yeah.
great.
She takes a lot of my ideas and runs with them. You know, she'll
Yeah,
come
that's
up to me and say,
great.
you know, I'm having trouble thinking of what I can do next. And I tell her about ideas, and a lot of stuff comes from dreams I have and things like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of us get our creative brains work overtime in your dreams, and you wake up and you're going, "Oh, I got to write that down before I forget."
Yeah, it's true. You know, if you don't, as soon as you wake up, it's gone, you know, usually. So,
Yeah.
while you're dreaming it just seems so real.
What? This is Lisa again. What made you think that you wanted to be a writer? I mean, did you have a teacher that inspired you, or how did you figure out that you wanted to write?
When I was in grade school, and they didn't have any kind of graduation ceremony, but they had those autograph books that they passed around.
Yeah.
And being that I didn't have that many friends, my book, I still have it, is mostly teachers signed it. And they all wrote, you know, keep writing, you are my best student, you're such a great reader, you know, things like that. And that kind of inspired me when I was in the sixth grade to teach. First, I volunteered to teach first graders how to read. And so it kind of got me thinking that, you know, this is something I might want to do.
Great. Anyone else have questions for Kevin? Lisa, do you want to say anything about Behind Our Eyes?
Well, Behind Our Eyes is an organization for disabled writers, and we have many avenues of creativity, which include Sunday night calls where we have speakers or we do critiques. We have a writers exchange program where people in the organization present free classes. We have a magazine, Magnets and Ladders, that comes out twice a year on the web and consists of essays and short stories and poetry. Of course, we have these book launches, which we're going to have some more in the future. We, let's see. I'm not as good at talking off the cuff as maybe some people are, so I'm sure
You're doing great.
I'm forgetting something, but it's a great organization, and I'm glad you all were here.
Thanks, Lisa. Behind Our Eyes' website is www.behindoureyes.org. Kevin, you've got the last word. Anything you want to say before we close out for the evening?
Well, I appreciate you all, and like I said, I'd like some feedback. If you liked it, you hated it. I don't take as not that many things that I take in life personally. I kind of just go with the flow. And if you're interested at all in songs and poetry, that book is also available. I'm going to try to get that book out, probably the next book out, probably by the end of the year. So we'll see how that goes. God willing, my health will be stable for a good long time. So I can continue to take care of myself and take care of Trish and take care of my dog.
Hi,
Yeah.
I want to say something. Hi, my name's Patrice.
Hey, Patrice.
I just want to say that I did read the book. I really liked it a lot. It kept my interest. I'm going to be honest, it was very heavy. You know, there was a lot of sadness in the book, I was really rooting for Ken, and I hope like the second book there's some more happy moments that for him, you know.
Yeah, there will be. It's definitely a little smoother of a read, not as traumatic. You know, things have not been great in my life, you know, even to this day. But still, you know, with maturity, you know, comes a little more stabilization. And then the realization, especially when you have several major ailments and you start to see your own mortality, that really kind of straightens you out.
Yeah, I can totally, that resonates with me. Dealing with life after 60 is definitely, you know, got to be, have a little courage and be brave because things get complicated.
Hopefully my goal is to at least live past 65 because that's when my father died and his family did not have much longevity.
Oh, yeah. That's where the generational thing comes in, right? Yeah. Well, all right. So we're going to sign off. And Kevin, I want to thank you for coming and sharing so much of your life with us and giving us a little extra tidbit on Trish and Henry. I really appreciate everything that you do and that Trish does, you know, in the writing world, and just wish you the best. I can't wait for the next book.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks for guiding this.
Yeah, no problem. It was fun. So I'm going to close out the room and everybody have a good evening.
You too. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.